This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fare thee well, U.S. Department of Education.
We're going to shut it down and shut it down as quickly as possible. It's doing us no good. We want to return our students to the states.
A lot of unhappy educators about this move.
What is his strategy? What is he going to do? How is he going to make sure, you know, that make America great again means being great in science and math and reading? I don't hear any of that coming from the president.
And whether you agree or disagree with President Trump's strategy of mass deportations, there are human consequences. We're going to tell you one such story.
We didn't get a goodbye. That's what we were fighting for in the beginning, because they were telling us that they were going to deport them no matter what. And we were just begging for them to just show some type of mercy and compassion on my parents.
Welcome to the It's Almost Friday edition of the LA Local for Thursday, March 20th, 2025, brought to you by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. I'm your minimally educated host, Jonathan Service. Coming up on today's Local, vaccination rates for California's kindergarten-age children are heading in the wrong direction, and public health officials are at a loss about how to talk with parents skeptical about vaccines. A married couple who had lived in Orange County for 35 years with kids, grandkids, a house, jobs, no criminal records, gets deported to Colombia. And it's National Pretend You're Working Day, otherwise known as the start of March Madness. Let's start with President Trump's announcement that he intends to do away with congressionally created U.S. Department of Education.
In a few moments, I will sign an executive order to begin eliminating the federal Department of Education once and for all. And it sounds strange, doesn't it? Department of Education, we're going to eliminate it. And everybody knows it's right. And the Democrats know it's right. And I hope they're going to be voting for it, because ultimately it may come before them. But everybody knows it's right. And we have to get our children educated. We're not doing well with the world of education in this country. And we haven't for a long time.
Well, apparently not everyone knows that's right. KNX News anchor Brian Douglas got analysis from Pedro Noguera, dean of the Rossier School of Education at USC, who couldn't figure out the logic in killing off the department.
If you believe that the United States has a need to become excellent in education, then yes, it's a bad thing. Because for years, the reason why the department was created in the first place under Lyndon Johnson was to ensure that we were serving the needs of our most vulnerable kids. So it's always been attached to civil rights, the mission. And both Republican and Democratic governments, administrations, have worked to ensure that we use this department to make sure that schools are making progress. This was, I think, most famously done under George W. Bush with No Child Left Behind. It's, you know, the act of destroying the department, destroying something is easy. What is he building? He hasn't even created President Trump has not created a clear explanation. What is his strategy? What is he going to do? How is he going to make sure, you know, that make America great again means being great in science and math and reading? I don't hear any of that coming from the president.
And my wife's in education, and we've actually talked about this before. She runs three schools, actually not far from USC. And the one concern she has, since it's kind of an underserved neighborhood, is the federal funding. That's what's really, that's the big impact, isn't it? The federal funding to these neighborhoods in need?
Yes, it's the federal funding, particularly for children with disabilities. And those children are all over the country in red and blue states. But it's also for low-income kids like we have here in L.A., probably at your wife's school. And making sure that now the president has said that those funds will still be in place. But what the department did was to make sure that the funds were used appropriately, which is very important, holding states accountable.
So why would, and help me out here, why would the Republicans, or anybody for that matter, want to dismantle the Department of Education? What is the bottom reason here? What's the main goal?
So that's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, because in terms of saving money, it doesn't represent a big cost saving. So what is the rationale? The president hasn't even presented one. So we can only guess that it's part of his effort to get the federal government out of the field of education. But let's be clear, education is key to the future of this country. We cannot be a great country if we do not invest in educating our citizens. And I don't hear the president talking about what his strategy will be to ensure that that takes place.
Now, there are a lot of questions about what comes next, because hundreds of millions of dollars in federal education funding hangs in the balance. And President Trump almost certainly needs the help of Congress to put the Education Department completely out of its misery. Stay tuned. Sticking with the education theme, for generations, getting your kindergarten age kids vaccinated against the measles, mumps and rubella was a pretty routine part of early childhood education. But coming out of the COVID pandemic, where seemingly everything and anything related to vaccination policies became politicized, new data shows a decline in vaccination rates among California kindergarten students. It wasn't a huge drop. It's about half a percentage point drop from this school year to the last. But it could be enough to help stoke measles outbreaks here, similar to what we've seen in Texas and New Mexico. I asked former LA County health physician Dr. Robert Kim Farley, who's now at UCLA, about how he talks to vaccine hesitant parents.
We are seeing not only misinformation and disinformation, but aggressive anti-science that is occurring. And we have to recognize that perhaps vaccines are our most cost-effective weapon that we have to combat disease in public health, and that we have to make sure that that guardrail, if you will, stays up. I think that one way I've tried to explain to listeners such as you have is that if you look at a dangerous curve in a road, let's say 1,000 people die going over this dangerous curve each year. That's like the disease. But what do we do? Well, we put in a guardrail, and that's like the vaccine. Now, the next year, the statistics showed nobody was killed going over this dangerous curve. However, three people were injured hitting this guardrail. That's like you see the rare side effects of vaccines, for example. So some people would say, oh my goodness, we've got to go ahead and take down this guardrail because of these injuries. Well, what's going to happen? You're going to go back to the 1,000 people dying every year going over the curve. And that's the same thing that happens with vaccinations.
I realize I'm asking you to almost analyze more of the communication strategy rather than the public health strategy. But
yes.
When belief and trust in institutions across the board, even in like religious institutions, your church, your synagogue, your mosque, in poll after poll, trust in institutions is down, certainly when it comes to government. How do you break through that and be like, we're not trying to implant you with chips from Bill Gates.
Right.
We're not trying to poison you with mercury and vaccines. Like, this is trying to keep your kids safe from what is a generations tested scientific formula here in vaccines. How do you do that?
Yeah, so I think there's a few ways. I think in one term, we need to improve our communication strategies, definitely from that point of view in public health. And I think sometimes what we need to do is, rather than simply giving the science, because oftentimes it's not necessarily a matter of logic, there's a matter of emotion that's going on these topics, is to also work at the emotional level as well. For example, having TV, radio, news, print, social media, especially because of the use of social media these days, where, for example, parents of one of these children who have died of measles or have had serious disease with measles like encephalitis are saying how much they regretted not having vaccinated their child and the remorse that they have that their child has now suffered permanent damage or even death because of not vaccinating. So it becomes also an emotional appeal. Don't be in our situation. Don't be feeling like we are by having neglected vaccinating our child. So I think we may need to work on those sorts of approaches.
Quick break here to pay some bills. We'll be right back with a story about how the Trump administration's deportation policies are playing out right here in Southern California. This is the LA Local for March 20th, brought to you by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. Be right back. Welcome back to the LA Local. I'm your host, Jonathan Service. Gladys and Nelson Gonzalez appeared to be living out the American dream in Orange County. They were immigrants from Colombia that had a house in Laguna Niguel. They had three grown daughters who were doing well. They had their first grandchild. They had no criminal records. They paid their taxes. But they entered the country illegally in 1989 and through a series of missteps and mishaps had not secured green cards nor citizenship. Gladys and Nelson were arrested by ICE during a routine check-in a couple days back. They're now sitting in a Louisiana detention center awaiting deportation to Colombia. KNX News producer James Tuck talked with her daughter, Stephanie Gonzalez, about what happened and why.
Was there a moment you and your sisters had a moment of goodbye? Because I take it if they were deported, you wouldn't have been at the gate seeing them off. I mean, just how did you and your sisters say goodbye?
Yeah, we didn't get a goodbye. That's what we were fighting for in the beginning, because they were telling us that they were going to deport them no matter what. And we were just begging for them to just show some type of mercy and compassion on my parents and let us buy their ticket to fly to Colombia. We were trying to work with them. We were trying to help do what they wanted. They wanted to deport them. Well, okay, fine. We will pay for their tickets so that they can just fly to Colombia with some dignity and they can leave tonight. And they wouldn't let us. And so they arrested them at their check-in appointment. We had no opportunity to say goodbye. And it was from the detention centers that they were sent to Colombia. So they just gave, there was no opportunity for that.
And now, obviously, since then, over the past couple of days, you'll have been in touch with them. How are they doing, your parents?
Yeah, they're staying strong despite the circumstances. My parents are faithful followers of Jesus, and they are just looking at the bright side of this, that they are together, that they are healthy, that they are alive. And so it's very hard for them to be away from us and from their grandkid. It's really hard.
Obviously, so 35 years, that's how long they've been in not just the country, but as I understand it, sort of the Orange County area. I'm just wondering, you know, when you were growing up, you know, there was obviously never an issue with this. I mean, did you kind of know that your parents were not citizens? Because obviously all three of you are citizens, you and your sisters. And as I understand it, I mean, just clarify, because you know how people are going to ask all sorts of questions, and especially certain people are going to be extremely skeptical. You know, they're lawbreakers, and they broke the law, and, you know, they knew it, and, you know, I mean, just describe the sort of growing up and that sort of side of it.
Yeah. You know, no, my parents, like so many other immigrants, who have absolutely no criminal record, and I just want to state that prior to this administration, a lot of people wouldn't view my parents and other immigrants as breaking the law when they entered this country. It is after the fact that this administration began that now everybody is wanting to point fingers and say all of these immigrants broke our laws and all this stuff, and therefore they should be treated like criminals like everybody else. And that is not fair. That is cruel, because these immigrants are good people trying to, like my parents when they first left Colombia, tried to leave their native country to seek a better life because Colombia was a very dangerous place to live when they left. And so a lot of people like my parents were trying to seek asylum. And that was the reason that they came here. And so since then, my parents have built a life for themselves here in Orange County. But my parents have never broken the law. They are good people who pay taxes, who have jobs.
Stephanie pointed out that her parents had tried several times to gain permanent residency and their citizenship, but they worked with some bad lawyers, made some mistakes, and couldn't make it happen. They figured they would be safe from the Trump administration's mass deportation policies since they had no criminal history, but apparently they were wrong. All right, let's end today's show on a much lighter note. Today is apparently the least productive workday of the year for Americans, otherwise known as the start of the March Madness college basketball tournament. Since I know absolutely nothing about college basketball, I'm a hockey guy myself, I'm bringing in a newsroom expert, and I'm inventing his title. KNX News Chief of College Basketball Analytics and All-Around Bullshittery, Brian Bolanski. All right, so the March Madness tournament is all about upsets, right? That's like why everybody tunes in the first day. Is that right?
Yeah, the first 2 days are typically upsets. You're looking for Cinderella stories, upsets, and that is the fun part about watching the first day and watching games that you have no desire to watch.
So this is about schools that no one's ever heard of, no one could ever know where they're from, beating big established programs.
So the schools that are in, if you follow the tournament year after year, these are a lot of schools that you see because they come from a smaller conference, and they typically get in every other or every couple of years. The upsets on the first day, McNeese State,
right,
14 or 13 beat Clemson, which was not supposed to happen at all. That was the big bracket buster.
And the other one?
The other one was Creighton over Louisville, mostly because a lot of people don't recognize Creighton, but it was an 8 and a 9, so it really wasn't an upset. So out of the millions of people that put in brackets on the ESPN bracket website, only 800,000 perfect brackets are still out there after the first half of the first day.
And any Southern California teams worth watching?
Well, UCLA is in the tournament,
right,
and they play today. I don't know if they've played at this point. I probably should have looked that up before I came in. But UCLA is in the tournament. UC San Diego is playing Michigan tonight.
UC San Diego. Not necessarily known for their athletics.
No, but they're in a conference. So all of the conferences usually get one bid.
Okay.
So the champion from each conference, even a smaller conference, that's how these little teams get in.
Right.
The McNeese States, the UC San Diego's, the Appalachian State gets in all the time.
All right. Two last questions. How's the overall quality of basketball these tournaments usually?
Great.
Is it?
Yeah, it usually is. I'm a huge sports fan, and I would rather watch college basketball than pro basketball anytime. Just a ton of fun.
Right. Okay, and Brian Bolanski's picks for winners? Or at least give me your final four.
Well, my final four, I'd have to go back and look at my sheet because I don't remember exactly which the brackets are, but I have picked my home state of Wisconsin to win it all, and there are 3 seeds. So it's not a horrible pick, but you wouldn't think. Most people wouldn't be picking Wisconsin.
All right. Go Badgers.
Yeah.
Well, it's the KNX News Chief Basketball Analytics and I believe Bullshittery Correspondent, something along those lines. We'll have you back. Thank you, Brian.
All right.
Good luck with those brackets, and if you need any help predicting the rest of the tournament, you know who to call. Not me. Thanks for listening to the Thursday edition of the LA Local. It's sponsored by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. You can see the inventory for all 14 dealerships at lacarguy.com. Drive the lane, people. Grab the rebounds. Box out the opposition or something like that. See you tomorrow.